Fish number 26368, reel 6.
Mr. Parks File, reel 6. We're talking about your time aboard HMS Gardner with B3 Escort Group, at least in the early days, based at Gladstone Dock on convoy duty.
Yeah.
Can I ask a couple of questions about the routine? So you, when you were on, say, on the way back from Newfoundland, well, could you tell us a bit about the shipboard routine in the sense when you weren't on watch?
Well, when I wasn't on watch, if it was action stations, everyone had somewhere to go. There was nobody didn't have anywhere to go. And my job was handing up 3-inch shells, followed from the Forward magazine up to the, pass up to another man, pass up to another one who put it in the breech of the gun. Those guns, we never fired them, incidentally. So I never did pass any up, but that's what I had to do. And of course, I had to practice doing it. Once or twice we did that at sea, and we shot the odd one off, I think the skipper did, to make sure everything was working okay.
Were you aware, what did you think of the 3-inch guns? Or were you aware they weren't
useless.
Much use? No, did you think that at the time?
No. I didn't know. But I know now. I was told that they used to bounce off the conning towers of U-boats. So they're supposed to be absolutely useless. The 5-inch shells to get through them.
If you weren't, when you weren't at action stations and you weren't on watch, what would you be doing?
Washing my clothes.
Tell us about that. Tell us how exactly you wash your clothes in the bucket, because people don't understand it.
Well, it was easy for us down in the engine room because you had steam pipes coming down with a tap on them, a valve on them, and you got a bucket of fresh water into them. You can wash in. You wash yourself in salt water because we had special anti-salt soap which lathered, because that salt won't lather, stops soap from lathering. And we did our what you did, you fill up your bucket with water, you put the steam pipe in, and you boiled them up. The steam pipe going in, and that was that. And they took them out and dried them.
So it was a matter of scrubbing
them
or anything?
Yes, you just scrub them. We had to get off some of the dirt. But very often just boil them for half an hour. We used to get them pretty clean. And we used to like to boil our collars as well, because the sailor's collar, when it's issued, is a dark navy. And it was considered you were lucky if you had a dark navy collar. We used to boil them to get the dye out so they were light blue. And we loved that. We're always messing about with the uniform.
In what way?
Well, the cat tally, for instance, that went round the cat. In peacetime, you have HMS and the name of the ship. The Gardner, for instance, HMS Gardner. I've got it on the cap up there. And, but in wartime, of course, you don't have the name of the ship on, because obviously it's given away to the enemy where your ship is if you're in dock. It just has HMS on it. And in fact, if it was tying a bow, you have to, when you first get them, you've got to tie, put them around your cat and tie a bow. To get them tight to stay on is difficult. And you had to have the bow over your left ear. Very important there. And nobody liked it over the left ear. If you look at old photographs of Matlows during the war, you'll see they've got it over their eye, their left eye. That's considered the right thing to have it. And also, for the uniform, we used to have, as we had a kit up keep allowance, I think I mentioned that in barracks earlier on, we used to save up if we could and get what we called a tiddly suit.
What was that?
A tiddly suit, but was just a little bit different from the issue. It was wider bell bottoms. It was cut, instead of to a V in the front, it was cut from the curve. What else? Oh, yes. Instead of the short bow here that you tie the silk with, you know sailors had a black silk down their neck. It was about 18 inches long and about 9 inches wide. It was folded 4 times to the width of an inch and a half. And that was put under the collar, brought round to the bottom, turned in, and then you had this bow that came across and you tied it, the bow, and that held the silk in place. And that silk was supposed to be in mourning for Nelson. That's the same with the collar, with its three what else? I think that was about it, really. And so that you weren't a rookie then. If you had the belt over your eye and your nice wide front and your bigger bell bottoms, you were considered, you know, one of the lads. That's just by the way, because you didn't wear it at sea, of course. You couldn't possibly wear it. I mean, bell bottoms were for turning up so that you could scrub the decks. You don't scrub metal decks of a destroyer.
Did the stokers have to clean ships?
No, we were the cream of the cream. Everyone considers the Navy always considers everyone in the lower deck considers the stokers to be the lowest of the low. If you can shovel coal, there's better we can do and nothing else, you know. You weren't considered fit enough for doing anything else, which was nonsense, of course, because we were really well equipped. We didn't have all these nasty watches to do and lookouts when the ice was breaking up, and you found them, great lumps of ice and 10 or 20 feet thick to crash about. Had 14 lookouts one time, and I felt sorry for them in the freezing cold. We were down in the warm. Beautiful. And anyway, you didn't go anywhere unless there was a stoker on board. No one, the engines didn't work, did they?
So how did you get on with the rest? I mean, the communications numbers, the sealant.
Well, you don't mix, you know. It's very interesting. I've been talking to the lads now in our association of...
That's the Captain's Class Association.
Captain's Class Figure Association. And it's quite true. You didn't mix with the other... The stokers kept us themselves. So did the radar people. So did the ERAs and so on. And the seamen, the torpedo men or whatever. And they went ashore with their buddies in their own mess. And that was just one of those things.
Now, what about food on board ship? Tell us a bit about what was the messing system and what food did you get?
Well, as far as I remember, I never bothered about the food because it never worried me. I always ate it. And in fact, there was one thing people refused to eat, which I loved, and that was herrings in tomato sauce. These oval tins. You see, what happened was this: you appointed for that particular trip a cook of the mess. One of the men who in the mess was the soldier's mess was willing to do the cooking, and so much money was given to him, and he had to go and buy the food from the canteen manager. He had to prepare the food for everybody, such as peel the spuds and so on. And with the potatoes, he had a net which he put them into. And attached to the nest at the opening was a wooden label with the mess on. We were mess five. Mess five, but on top of it was a poker. And then he used to take them up to the galley, and the cooks used to cook the stuff. We prepared it, and he cooked it. He used to cook the mess, prepared it. And so he had the money given to him for buying food. Now, if you had a good cook of the mess, by the end of the trip, there was some money over, and we got some back. We shared it out amongst us. Shared back with you, unless you either didn't eat for the last week of the trip, or you ate very sparsely, and you got no money back.
Now, were you ever cook of the mess?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
so what would you do? What food would you prepare?
Well, I don't like to tell you that, because my wife thinks I can't cook. And we used to clacker, was one thing. You heard of clacker? That's a Navy name for pastry. And we used to make a thing that everybody loved, Manchester tart. Manchester tart was made in a huge, because it went so quickly, a huge meat dish, and it was pastry on the bottom. Then it was a lot of jam, perhaps half an inch of jam, all over that. And on top of that, custard. And you took it up to be cooked. And when it came back, the custard was solid, and the jam was pretty sticky, and you cut it into pieces, and it was delicious. Manchester tart, never forget Manchester tart, for that flavour. The things we hated most were herrings and tomatoes, except me. So if we could run out of money, we had to live on herrings and tomatoes.
Any other favourite meals that you like?
But just let me finish back the herrings in.
All right, sorry.
Okay. We call them herrings in. We never call them herrings in tomatoes, we call them herrings in. And we used to skim them across the water like flat stones you do on the beach. So I used to say, for God's sake, don't do that, and take them home. I used to take kit bags of them home when I was on leave, 20 or 30 tins. And we actually ate them for months after the war. Anyway, you say, I'm afraid.
Yeah, just favourite
well,
meals.
Well, of course. That's the only thing I remember. Not just a tart. Because we only had fresh milk. We had condensed milk. Not, I think it was because we had some of each. I can't remember what else we had, to be honest with you.
But it was all right. I know you're not bothered.
You know,
by
when you're a, when you're 18, you're not too bothered. You're hungry. You'll eat any damn thing that's there. But I can't remember.
And you got enough.
You got enough. You got plenty of food. Never, never short of food.
What about the rum merchant?
Well, I was underage to start with. The first year, and you don't get to, I think you're 20, and even then it's 2 and 1, 2 parts water, 1 part rum. And if you've got a buddy who's had a birthday or you've got something, you, a tot is divided theoretically into 2 gulpers or 4 sippers. Have you heard of this? Yeah.
Tell me that.
Well, what happened? If it's Tommy's birthday, now for instance, I was at sea about my 21st birthday, and everyone was giving me sippers, so I can just take a sip of it on top of my own lung. And have I mentioned this before?
No.
Or the gulpers, which was half a tot. One gulper was half a tot, 2 gulpers were 4 tot. And it was very, very gay anyway, all the along the way. And when I had my 21st birthday, everybody gave me slippers. And I was pissed out of my head. And in fact, when I came round, all my knuckles were raw. I skinned them, hitting the bulkhead. Messing about, I was completely out of. But I did hear later that we had a chief, he was called the head of the mess, I think. Head of the mess? Something like that. And he got everyone together and he said, look, this has got to stop. He said, if anything happens to this ship, I'd be the first out of the companionway, because you'd be just behind me. And you leave that poor bastard in his bunk. Obviously. He said, so it's not to happen again at sea. I don't want to see anyone drunk. So it was sippers or gulpers. And it was too mixed, 2 and 1. And the man who used to bring it up was called Tanky. That was his nickname, the Tanky. In fact, I was Tanky. If you saw my papers there, it says Tanky, which is the man who goes and gets a mail of duties, goes and gets some match and brings it up. So that was it.
We'll come back to that probably. What about Kai? Was that some people think it, some people like it, some people don't.
Do you know what Kai is?
Tell us.
Well, Kai is chocolate. It's really cocoa, but it's thick cocoa. I mean, it's so thick you can stand a spoon up in it. Almost. And when you're on watch, in the middle of the watch and so on, and you get some Kai brought down to you, particularly the seamen who are out on watch at night and so on. So you have to remember that these bridges are open. The wind in close, and people got pretty cold, and it's like a big fat bar of bitter chocolate, and you bake lumps off and you put it in a cup, you pour boiling water on it and you keep bashing it until it's melted all the way.
Now who would do that? Would you do that? Would the cooks do it?
No, you do that, yeah. And then add milk if you want to, and sugar. It was bitter chocolate, so you really need to put sugar in it. It was a damn warming drink, it was very good.
Now, what about recreations on the lower deck? You know, when you were at sea, well, when you weren't on duty, what could you do? What did you do to sort of pass the time?
The most boring things out to me, talk about football and women, really, I suppose. And that was all the fake cards. Sometimes we played illegal games like Crown and Anchor. That was not allowed in the Navy. Too much money was lost.
You played it, did you?
Oh yes. You know what?
Can you explain what it is for them?
Well, it's you have 2 dice, and you have a board, and it's marked off in big squares. There's a crown that painted in one square, and an anchor in the other, and then numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on. And it's a bit like roulette. You put your money down in the square or on the line between 2 squares or whatever, and then you roll the dice. If your number comes up on the dice, you've won that money that's on there. The other people put on people who lost too much money on it.
But the besides numbers, so the crown and the anchor, weren't they, presumably?
Yeah,
because it was a mug's game for some reason, which I'm not quite sure of.
Well, because it always lost.
But why would you always lose?
We didn't always lose. I mean, that's an exaggeration. But if you got the crown and the anchor, you took the bank. You took over the bank, and that was considered that if you hold the bank, you're the one that makes the money. Because you've got more chance of losing than winning. And the banker will hit.
Did you lose much at it?
No. But I tell you one time I played at cards. I can't remember what it was. I think it used to be play for money. And I was foolish enough to borrow £1 from somebody. No, it was £2 actually, which was 2 weeks' wages for me. It was a lot of money. And I wrote to my wife and I said she'd send me £2. She did with a raised Kurt letter. She was very, very annoyed about it. And I remember once really lending the man £1, which he promised to pay back, and he never did. Well, these days, £1 doesn't mean much, but in those days, it was a lot of money. I was a bit bitter about losing that £1.
How did you get on with the lads once you'd settled in?
Well, I found a mixed with them fine. You all have a buddy, and you call him Wings. Everything's got a navy language, it's sort of slang and so on. And a winger is your best pal. He's my Wings. He's my winger. Don't ask me where he came from. I haven't any idea. And
who was yours? Do you remember his name?
No. Well, 2 years we used to go shooting together. I've forgotten his name. Bill somebody or other.
What were you looking for in a winger? What was he like?
I don't know, he just sort of generated to whatever. You go on better with some people than you do with others. It's a life like that. And there was one bloke I disliked intensely. His name was Fordham. So I always remember his name. And anybody's name was Ford, by the way, they were known as Florrie, because it was a famous musical artist called Florrie Ford. And for instance, on the call, the sister ship of ours, there was a Garland. So his name was always Judy Garland. Judy.
What was your nickname?
Well, because it was File, they used to call me Chisel. Can you understand that? That's what I can. And then it got to Chiz, and then it called Chiz. Stupid.
There's no trouble on the lower deck.
Oh yes, this foot chap Fordham.
Yes.
Well, I had an hour with him one time, and someone said to, because he was a cocky little bugger, as small people usually are, and someone said, "Well, why don't you bloody suck the bastard?" And I said, "No, he's far too small to call me a bully." That's all I remember. He charged at me. I was looking about like that, and he hit me, and I landed underneath the table. And that was the end of that. I didn't bust to challenge him again. So we got on all right together. There was tension, of course, but we all smoked a lot, and tobacco was cheap.
Tell me about the smoking. Had you smoked before you went in?
Yes, since 9. When I was in Costco, and we used to have three cigarettes, boxes of cigarettes, for the guests to help themselves to. So I actually helped myself and went out and supplied all the village boys with cigarettes.
Now, did you find you smoked more in the Navy? I mean, was it a heavy smoking environment?
No, about 20 a day was normal for everybody in those days. But can you imagine in a place that size, smoking? I mean, how am I not dead by now? I've got only nose.
It got pretty foggy, yeah.
It was terrible, wasn't it? The farting, it was unbelievable. Now, the tobacco was interesting. It was called Ticklers was the nickname for it. And why I had called Ticklers, I never know. But it cost a shilling £1. You got it in a tin. And there was, when you got to the bottom of the tin, you're rolling your own, of course. You spend a lot of your time off rolling cigarettes. When you got to the bottom, it was all dust. And one afternoon, I was in Gibraltar, I was asleep in the hammer, and with the mouth wide open, some rotten devil would have tipped all this dust into me. Which wasn't very kind, which woke me up very suddenly. And then cigarettes were 6 pence for 20, and large woodbines. So woodbines used to be a small cigarette, like Park Drive. But then there was a large woodpile which was full size, which you couldn't get into East Street, and they were only forty take me for 20. And so you had as many as you wanted.
You didn't get a ration in, but they were cheap to buy.
Yes, yes, they were cheap, no duty on them at all. So they were cheap to buy. They were given a free ration, like they were in the army. The army, I believe, got in certain regiments, got free cigarettes. There was an awful cigarette some of the chaps used to bring abroad that they got from South Africa called Springbok. And I tried one of those once, it was dreadful. And then you could buy the leaf. You could actually buy the leaf tobacco and make it yourself. And that was interesting how they made it, because they used to call it, I'll tell you what they called it in a minute. You get these leaves, you get a piece of canvas about 4 inches or 5 inches wide, about a foot long. You soak it in rum, and then you put it on the table, and you put the leaves, flatten the leaves out on top of this canvas, keep piling them up, and there's a bit more rum pouring on until you've got a nice heap. Then you turn it over like rolling a cigarette, and it was thick then. In fact, it was called a prick of tobacco, for obvious reasons. And then you had this long string, which is for corking the decks with. Do you know what corking is?
We'll come to that, yeah. Okay. Carry on with the prick first.
All right. Well, it's a long tarred string, and what you did, you hooked it over one of the hooks, put it over one of the hooks for the hammocks, or in this case, you didn't have hammocks, but there were holes in the girders, you put it through and tied them up, and went on the other end, and then you had it, I can't work out quite how they worked it, because you sat on the string, it was so strong, you could sit on it, and you were holding this tobacco, in this prick of tobacco, and you turned it, like this, as you moved along, and the string was going around the tobacco very, very tightly, because there was a whole weight of your body on it, and all the juice was squeezing out into a bucket. And then when you'd finished doing that, it was all squeezed out, you then put it away and forgot about it for 6 months. And then when you came to open it, it was a solid lump of black tobacco, like chewing tobacco, which the lads used to have a penknife and cut bits off, and not chew it in actual fact, but they smoked in pipe.
Did you smoke a pipe at all?
I did, yes, at one time, yes. But I wasn't very good at pipe smoking, I always bit through the stems until I got a falcon pipe, which was you couldn't bite right through them. But yes, I had a pipe at one time. We all tried pipes at one time, I think, or we used to. So,
you mentioned the cording of the deck.
Oh yes, well, with wooden decks, which ours wasn't, of course, it was all steel, wooden decks, the wood, of course, swells, and if you had them tight together, the planks, they'd all come up as well. So what they do is there's quite a big gap between each plank, and this tarred string is put, it's called caulking, C-A-U-K-I-N-G, something like that, they have a special hammer, a caulking hammer, and they sit on the deck bashing this in, going all the way along. Tedious job. Now what happens when the wood swells, of course, you've allowed for it because you've got a gap which is full of this string, which gives gives, so that the deck doesn't come out.
So they wouldn't do that on your ship, because it had steel decks.
Yes, but on a lot of the ships they're wooden decks, not all. And later on, I'll tell you about how I had to pick oakum. It was called oakum, by the way.
So that's later. Yeah.
Yes, I'm going to tell you about
now
that.
Now, you're
later.
On lots of convoys, and looking at your thing, I don't think you remember them one by one. You remember incidents,
yes.
You know. So if I just pick out some of the incidents,
yes.
We'll perhaps talk about them. One of them is when you picked some German airmen up in the English Channel.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Tell us that story, because that seems quite a...
Yeah, well, we also picked up some RAF as well, as it happened, I remember. They said, thank God for the Navy, because they were in a dinghy that had been shot down over the channel. And so had these Germans, and I think there were three or four of them, I can't remember. And they came, they were being pulled on board, wet and miserable. And that's the last one, the young fair-haired lad, I remember, got his head just above the the deck, one of our lads had a wheel spanner. A wheel spanner is these valve wheels, and it's got a hook on it, and hook one way and hook the other, and you put it in, you can open the valve. They call them wheel spanners in the engine room. And this chap, he wasn't an engine room rating, he rushed forward with a heavy wheel spanner and hit this chap on the head as hard as he could, and the poor devil fell back into the sea, and he was washed away. We couldn't get him, and the chap was put up on a charge, went in front of the first lieutenant, and he said he'd lost his family in the raid on Coventry. There was a very bad raid on Coventry during the war, and he lost his, I think it was his wife, his children, either his mother or father or father-in-law, I can't quite remember. And anyway, he was still put on the court martial when we got back in, and went into barracks. But he got away with it, and he didn't come back to our ship, I don't think. I never saw him again. I don't know, I would recognise him as a seaman. And that was a nasty incident.
Did you have any sympathy for him or for the German? Or both?
Well, for both. One did. Later on in the war, when he took some German prisoners ashore, there was an army sergeant who was treating him badly, which was unnecessary, and we had sympathy for the Germans then. Told this bloody sergeant to stop kicking their suitcases into the sea as they came off the gangplank, you know? But that's another story. Yeah. On the fourth day.
No, tell us the whole story.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
We haven't got
yes,
the
yes.